Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show, the live version for those of you watching on YouTube at 1:30, every Friday. I'm joined today by Ofense Darby. Ofense, very good to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Nick. Always a pleasure to feature in one of these Friday shows.
Always good to have you with us. Now, we may be joined later by Chris Hutton, who is currently, I think, about to do an interview with ENCA. So we're just going to have to wait for that to be finished before he can join us. But nevertheless, we shall plug on ahead with the news. Some important stuff going on at the moment. One is that government is now being a little bit more definite about a possible review of BEE. Although, when I say definite, I mean they've gone from talking about it to saying that it will happen, but being quite vague on the details. Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Parks Tau, has announced there's going to be two reviews of BEE. The first is a short-term review, which is supposed to be completed by the end of March, which will focus on, quote, refining regulations, codes of good practice, guidelines and practice notes, and how to tie those into the transformation fund. That doesn't sound super appealing to me, particularly when it's all regulatory changes rather than legislative ones. And a longer term one, which will look at the sort of more fundamental aspects of BEE. The second phase is a long-term review of the Triple BEE Act for, quote, substantive amendments. There's no timeline for the second one and no indication of what substantive amendments means. Our former colleague, Londi Ndlovu, who's now a DA MP, said, when will the ANC realize that this is a race-based policy of that this race-based policy of empowerment will simply be gamed by its patronage machine? In response, Tal said, the ANC's purpose of existence is the national liberation of black people, including from economic bondage that was created by apartheid. So I see in Parliament, at least, that BEE debate doesn't seem to have moved on at all into more complicated realms. Ofense, what do you make of this? I mean, if one was being very optimistic, one could say that this is the ANC trying to very slowly walk their way towards some sort of actual positive reform of BEE. But I don't know, this feels a lot to me like kind of kicking the can down the road and just trying to sort of keep business interested while not really necessarily making a big change. Or am I being too cynical? What's your take?
Sure. So firstly, I'd like to add that a conversation like this between us also in Parliament would have never happened 10 to 15 years ago. The idea of BEE was firmly supported in all realms of society because of the intentions it has. And now that the conversation has boiled down to needing to refine it and reform it and improve it, it speaks to how you can't only judge policy based off intentions, but also results. So the minister to now announce that there will be two stages of refinement and reform of BEE, I would say, is an admission to failure, an admission that BEE has not done what it said it will do. It is not fulfilling its intentions, and thus it needs to be improved so that it can no longer fail in the future. It's good that we are having this conversation. It speaks also to the pressure that's been going against BEE and its advocates. So pressure both internally and externally. Externally, of course, coming from the United States, a lot of critique against race-based policies, and one of the four demands from the U.S. being that they would like U.S. companies to be exempt from BEE. We saw just after the Ramaphosa trip to the Oval Office that Minister Soli of Communications drafted a plan, even though there is no connection. The plan was probably drafted before the trip to the US, drafted a plan on how Starlink can get into SA by bypassing BEE and amending it in some shape or form. So that's the external pressure. The internal pressure, of course, coming from the DA making proposals to replace BEE and starting this this ambitious campaign blatantly attacking BEE with billboards all over Gauteng and so on. So the conversation has definitely changed, and that should be welcome. So the conversation is this policy that has good intentions, that was supported by a huge majority many years ago. That is not the case anymore. Now we need to talk about either replacing it or reforming it. So in terms of the change in conversation, definitely a thumbs up. What the conversation is, though, that's not very much a thumbs up. It looks like Minister Dow is doubling down on the issues of BEE. It's almost as if the ANC can't really admit to why BEE is an issue. And BEE is an issue not because of its lack of implementation or its poor implementation, but because there's an inherent issue in it. And the DAMP, what's his name again? Mlondi.
Mlondi.
He spoke about it very well. And the issue is that it's a race-based policy. The racial criteria to it is the fundamental issue of the policy itself, where what the DA is offering actually is that rather than having race as a metric, we should replace race with socioeconomic status and being able to help people who are impoverished regardless of skin color, rather than having race as a criteria. Because once you have race as a criteria, you can help use it, you can help manipulate the law, the legislation, the policy to help fuel your patronage networks to benefit a friend of yours, and you would be able to benefit that friend of yours purely because of the hue of their skin. So that fundamental issue of BEE is not being resolved. And Minister Tao seems like he's not willing to address that fundamental issue. He goes back to the statement of intent in the GNU on how the statement of intent talks about redress and transformation. So regardless of the parties involved in the GNU, redress and transformation will remain the policy of the government. Unfortunately, the ANC's understanding of that compared to the DA's understanding of that are fundamentally different.
It is interesting. There was sort of a question also referenced in this, the reporting on this, about, you know, as you just said, you know, the DA and the ANC have this completely different view of BE policy. The ANC thinks that it can still be saved, or you can just tinker around the edges, and the DA says it needs to be completely reformed. But rather than the whole thing devolving into like completely just trying to tear each other apart, they sort of said, oh, well, you know, we know in the GNU there's some differences between us. And I think this is an interesting development in that we've seen recently in the GNU, which is the major parties kind of accepting that they're never really going to get along and just to live with the difference. You know, it's like a married couple where the partners just decide to accept that the other ones are going to have affairs, and that's just how it is, and it doesn't mean they're going to get divorced, at least not right now. That's kind of the impression I get from this, with the sort of, well, you know, we're going to have input on this from multiple sources, and, you know, there's differing views inside the GNU. What's your take on that?
I must give the ANC credit for how it's so good at playing politics. The ANC definitely won in terms of, it may have lost the election, but it won the negotiations of the elections, because all the words, all the phrases within the statement of intent, redress, transformation, and so on and so on, all of that, it's able to use that to reinforce its own policies, despite having semantic disputes over those particular words. So transformation to the ANC is completely different to transformation to the DA, for example. And thus the ANC, like I said, has won the political game, the political wrestle, the political match between the issues of BEE, because it's able to justify BEE off of this piece of paper that the DA agreed on. And using, of course, its leverage in terms of the number of votes it got, it's able to still push its weight over.
Right. The support of, I think, a lot of the other smaller parties who, apart from the Freedom Front Plus, I think pretty much all usually support the ANC's moves on a lot of these things.
Parties both in the GNU and also in the opposition.
Yes, and in the opposition. Welcome to Chris Hutting, who has just joined us. I hope your interview went well, sir. Before we move on, any thoughts on this proposal to reform BE? I was just sort of saying that I think this is kind of a bit thin on details, and this is kind of kicking the can down the road, trying to save BE. It's not going to be substantive reform, or do you think I'm being too cynical? What do you think, Chris?
Nick, I could say many things about you, but that you're too cynical is not one of them. I would say realistic in your assessment and your analysis. Look, I mean, this year we've seen in the second half of this year a bit of a... We've seen the positive sentiment of the GNU feeding in somewhat into our GDP activity, into the performance of the JSE, the Rand holding somewhat against the dollar. These kinds of things, I think, are giving government and policymakers and bureaucrats the... maybe the excuse to say we can reform some things, but actually our economy is not doing that badly. When you need to wholesale reform things along the front of things like BEE policy and legislation, because of how it holds back investment, because of how much waste and corruption there is in the, on the public procurement side, on government spending. So let's see what else comes out of this. I think we'll keep a keen eye on this from an RR and CRA point of view. But if this kind of thing is not done properly, I think it does risk just delaying South Africa's more positive upward economic trajectory, which of course then continues to feed high unemployment, potential of unrest, as citizens realize, look, things really aren't changing from a growth point of view and job creation point of view. Those things that we see respondents in our polls year after year say are very important to them, more important than many other hot button political issues. So let's see exactly how this is done. And if not properly, I think there is a serious risk that this, that even the whole process is hijacked just by more vested political interests. It could really just be sort of window dressing and say, we're doing this for growth reasons, but actually we just want to make sure that we look like we're doing something, but still it's us and our friends who get the tenders and the contracts.
All right. I see someone in the comments saying that Duduzile Zuma has resigned from parliament, and we will get to that story at the end because that's rather amusing. all right, let's move on to our next topic. The shortlist for people who are going to be the next head of the National Prosecuting Authority have been come out into the public sphere. Shamila Batoy, the current head, is expected to step down. Her term basically ends at I think in January next year. So we're looking at who the next NPA head is going to be. And boy, are there some not great options on this list. The one that has jumped out, though, is Menzi Semelane to be the next one. Menzi Semelane is, shall we say, an infamous character. Back in, so I was 13 or 14 at the time, so forgive me if I mistake some of the details, but back in 2008-2007 I think he was the deputy in under Vusi Pikole, who was, you know, the most independent of our prosecutors in South Africa's history, actually went after people who were politically connected. And Semelane was apparently encouraging people to spy on him within the office and undermining him at many turns. There were accusations by people inside the Zuma camp that Vusi Pikole was, you know, formerly an apartheid spy, and therefore he couldn't be trusted. And this sort of was a fatal blow, which undermined Vusi Pikole's ability to stay in the job when he tried to investigate ally of Thabo Mbeki, Jackie Salibi. He was basically suspended, and he was subsequently fired by the Zuma camp when they took over under President Kgatlego Motlanthe. So Semelane played an important role in undermining the independence of the National Prosecuting Authority and holding the corrupt to account. He was found by the Ginwala Commission later of that the accusations he had made at various points against Pikole were spurious and are rejected as being without substance and may have been motivated by personal issues. Basically, they found that he was not trustworthy, is to put it bluntly. And now he's on the shortlist for the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Let me start with you, Chris. What?
I hope that's not a genuine what, because it is a good reminder that the more things change, the more they stay the same. So the talk of accountability, of bringing in a better kind of cadre, better quality of cadre that we've heard from President Ramaphosa, from Secretary General Fikile Mbalula throughout 2025. I mean, yeah, when this sort of thing happens, it does tell you that they're not all that serious about real accountability and real reform. They're focused on how best can they salvage patronage networks, vested interests, to still protect them, because they also have serious vested interests. The leadership of the ANC in the form of the National Executive Committee. So let's see exactly how far this goes versus some of the others nominated and put forward, what the kind of process looks like in substance, and then if this carries further or not. But the shortlist in and of itself, I mean, it does, you know, remind one of people like Malusi Gigaba being in the top, you know, certain numbers of the ANC's list to go to parliament and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it portends again to the party talking a big game about changing things, but they're not actually doing it in these institutions in which they are involved and who they put forward to be involved in these institutions, both on the government side, so the public sector side, in these kinds of guises and in things like SOEs, but also in the private sector, where they make sure that they've got the right kind, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, you get this position, you know, make sure if things come to a head, you know. Yeah, you'll see permutations of this in things like the Madlanga Commission as well. And maybe here I'm being too cynical, but a lot of this stuff is performative, and then it gives the impression that things are changing and the rhetoric changes. But in substance, vested interests still win out in many ways.
Offense. I mean, when it comes to reform, this is, I think, why it's so difficult often to take the ANC seriously. They'll say, we need reform of this, reform of that. The police need to be reformed. There's this commission here. We need to go after the corrupt. We need to make sure the NPA is recovered from state capture. And then they draw up a shortlist with someone like this on it. I mean, what?
Yeah, true. And the real issue really is that, unfortunately, this Simelane character on paper does meet all the requirements, all the requirements to make the shortlist. So he is a South African citizen. He has the legal qualifications. He's been in executive management for over 10 years. And those are all the minimum requirements. And that's why he made it all the way to the shortlist. And the reason why his appointment by the former President Zuma was invalidated at the Constitutional Court in 2012, was because Zuma's decision was found to be irrational, and not that the court really declared Simelane as being dishonest. Even though he is dishonest legally on paper, it doesn't. There's a loophole for him to play around.
Right,
to play around the law.
That finding was later in the Jingwala Commission, when Jingwala said, I must express my displeasure at the conduct of Director General Justice Simelane, which I found in many respects to be inaccurate or without basis in fact and law, which is pretty damning in that formal speak that, you know, the legal people use.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So unfortunately, Simelane did find a way to play around the law to get to where he is now. However, like you said, all those other findings that have been made that do declare him, or at least explicitly call him a dishonest character, I think he won't get anywhere past the shortlist where he is now. I don't think he'll earn the appointment. The other five people, I don't know much about them, but there isn't a scandal surrounding them. So I'll give the ANC a hint of credit. I might get in trouble for doing that. I'll give them credit and say, you know what, they'll do their job, and I don't think Simelane will get the job, and I think it'll end here.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, as you say, you know, this is a shortlist, not the final. But I think it is pretty bad that he even made it this far.
Yeah.
When he's clearly, you know, he's like the guy who, one of the guys who opened the door to state capture. Chris, any final thoughts?
I guess only to add how so much of this boils down to patronage and retaining that influence and that control. So as Offensive correctly points out, you know, this is not the final appointment, but the fact that he is there, you know, for all the talk around things like ideology and policy, and not to underestimate the importance of those things in sort of ANC decisions, but so much of this, as the party comes under more and more pressure electorally, we're going to see them trying to cling on as best as they can to access to resources and influence as for as long as possible. I mean, it's into the local government elections next year, into the 2029 elections. It becomes very
loyal
and don't underestimate them even and how more like, important,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and how astute they become in where they try and place people and get them into positions of influence and where they then have more leverage. So then they won't try and, you know, have everyone across the public sector and all these kinds of different institutions, but they're going to try and place people where they can get the best out of it and access to the resources for the longest possible time.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, if the NPA was truly, truly independent, it would very rapidly change the politics of this country in some very important ways. And I think particularly for the ANC, who would have enormous internal disruptions from the fact that, you know, they would have various people like, well, I mean, named in the state capture report, Nomvula Mokonyane, you know, being probably brought up on some sort of charge. But anyway, we hopefully the public pressure around here will prevent him from going any further on this appointment process. Okay, so there's all the depressing news. Let's get to the amusing news, and that is MK internal politics, which continues to be the most exciting, confusing, rapidly changing thing in the country. So there's been this scandal that's been going on for the past few weeks about Duduzile Zuma Sambudla, you know, allegedly luring off these guys to go and fight in the Russian army and then just abandoning them there. And apparently this is a scandal that finally someone in MK actually feels like they need to resign for. Duduzile Zuma has apparently resigned from the MK party and from parliament. Now, these things change so quickly, who knows? Maybe she'll be back. Maybe it's fake news put out by the opposing faction to destroy her. Maybe she really is gone and she's going to pop up in some other place in MK. Who knows? I don't know. But Offense, I mean, I have no... What? Huh?
Good question. Good question. Yeah, so one thing, it's good that she resigned. It's good for the integrity of parliament.
I never would have guessed it, honestly, from any party MP. Mean,
when it comes to this party, we do have to celebrate the bare minimum, and the bare minimum has been done here. And also, we've seen characters in other parties who have these kinds of scandals, maybe not to this magnitude, but who have these scandals and do not resign and stick on their seats, keep their seats. So at least for the integrity of the House of the People, Parliament, at least all of this has been dealt on the side and it's not a member of Parliament that's being charged in all of this anymore. Secondly, it's wondering why she did resign. So I'm not going to give her credit saying that she did it because she wants to not harm the integrity of Parliament. There's probably another reason why she resigned, and that's something we need to figure out. That could be a reason, but we also need to think of other reasons. Did the higher ups, did her father tell her that, hey, I think you need to get out of here? Is it out of punishment? Is it a 4D chess play? That's something we'll have to see moving further along. But with the internal politics of MKP, yeah, with Zuma, you never know. He is a political genius, if we all have to admit. So maybe there's something going on there, or maybe it's just a repeat and more of the same and a trend of what's been going on in MKP recently, which is a mess. There's no real coordination. There aren't any real structures. There aren't any real rules in the MK party. So we've seen this so many times throughout since they've been in parliament. It's only significant now because it's the daughter of Jacob Zuma. So we'll have to see what happens moving forward.
what I think makes this difference is different is the fact that one of Zuma's other daughters laid the charges against her, and that I think she claimed that some of the guys who were sent over were in fact Zuma family members. And I think maybe that was where the line was truly crossed here, was that this is not just embarrassing for the party and for the family, but this was embarrassing in the fact that it may even end up hurting in a very direct way some members of the Zuma family. So, you know, it's always good when a politician resigns from a scandal, as you said. But I don't know if like we can call this the end chapter. When our pre-show discussion, I joked that, you know, who knows, maybe in a week or two, she'll be reappointed to Parliament for MK, and this time as the leader, kicking out John Klopp, which seems to be how these things go. Actually, who is the leader? Because John Klopp is suspended for trying to get rid of Colleen Mokebule, isn't he? So I don't even know who the leader currently is of MK.
Yeah, it's not Klopp. No, definitely.
Yeah.
The leader is Jacob Zuma.
The leader is, I mean, the de facto leader is Jacob Zuma. Yes, I'm saying the pretend on paper one.
Yeah.
Chris, what's your take on this? I mean, we've seen actually some evidence this is actually hurting MK. The Social Research Foundation polling that came out, what is it, last week, showed that MK are currently polling at 7%, which is half of what they got in the last election. Now, 4% margin of error, I think it was. So, you know, it could be as high as, what, 11? But that's still like a pretty big drop for the party. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is hurting them.
In that SRF poll, only the DA and the ANC got more than 10%, respectively. So no other party got above 10%. So take that from what that might mean. If you talk about 4D Chess, I wonder if she's going to find her way to the EFF and weaken that organization even further, so that MK doesn't have another challenge from the left, as it were, in South Africa. I don't think that's the case, but I just want to float that theory. If it does come true, then you can also ask me for the lotto numbers in the future. I just want to put that out there. I think, South African voters are shopping around quite a bit, and like parties, they can't take votes for granted really going into next year's election. So MK, I think it's still got the sort of moniker and the mantle of the main disruptor of our politics, and they will probably ride that still into the elections next year, especially as a protest vote for disillusioned ANC voters. But this kind of thing really doesn't help from a perceptions and a narrative point of view. We're so much in politics, issues like affordability and ideology and quality of life, etc., but also just perceptions and narrative and vibes. It can come down to that. So let's see exactly how much this could hurt. But it doesn't help that this kind of thing happens so regularly. The resignations, the changes in leaders in parliament, and just on MK and the EFF, I think over the last 18 months or so, I mean, especially in the first 6 to 9 months of the GNU, when some of the more serious ideological and policy differences were aired almost daily between the ANC and the DA, we haven't had any effective opposition in parliament to take advantage of that. Number one, to take advantage of it and boost themselves, but number two, to hold the government to account. Now, we won't, those of us talking here and hopefully the majority watching won't agree with the policies put forward by the MK and the EFF, but you need like strong principled opposition in your parliament, ideally, and we haven't had that.
Yeah, they have tried to be opposition parties, but particularly MK has this habit of just sort of opposing basically everything kind of, and whether it's a good idea or not, there's no sort of nuance to it. They just sort of like aggressively oppose, and then they are also, I mean, they made that big mistake a while ago in parliament when they gave every single speech violently opposing, I think it was one of the budget votes, and then ended up voting for the budget because they were confused about which was the way they were supposed to vote, which is not this is not a sign of an effective parliamentary opposition, although it has been, I think, a little bit tamped down by the fact that the DA, because it is disempowered within the GNU, has continued to sort of play this role of having itself in government where in its portfolios it acts like the government, and all the other portfolios it acts like the opposition, which I think is actually a strategy that's worked quite well for it, much better than I thought it would. Any final thoughts, Fencer?
I think the acting parliamentary leader for MKP is Weekend Special Des Van Rooyen. But I also think there's still a dispute between Des Van Rooyen and Trope. There's a lot of politics going on in this. So just to add on to that, on the issue of opposition as well, is that here we are, the three of us, and we're not sure who the leader of the official opposition in parliament is. And that's because such a vacuum has been left ever since the DA joined the government. And now we're talking about Weekend Special maybe or maybe not being the leader. It's also confusing. It speaks to the opposition party crisis in parliament and in South Africa now that we are in coalition politics and that we have a GNU where the ANC, where the two biggest parties are in a coalition together. Apparently, we're not allowed to call it a grand coalition, but essentially, that's what it is. Yeah. We've seen, especially with the... Mm-hmm.
The EFF does tend to be a slightly better, I think, at doing opposition stuff than MK does.
I was going to add on that and say that with the budget committee, with that committee session that was happening where they were discussing the VAT situation and so on, the EFF member of parliament, I forgot his surname, but he was doing an awesome job and he was working hand in hand with the DA MP in opposing this VAT increase. And then the MK member of parliament who was in that same committee was quiet throughout the whole session. And that's the official opposition. So it goes to speak onto this vacuum that's been left open from the official opposition party having joined the government. And the one that we are left with has its own politics going on the sidelines of the actual politics that should be dealt with, which is running the government or holding the government accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, last story, just because a viewer mentioned it. This has made international headlines because it's so bizarre. But there is a politician, a regional councillor from the north of Namibia, who has been a councillor since 2005. He's a member of SWAPO, the governing party of Namibia. Okay, well, that's not very interesting, except his name is Adolf Hitler. It's a rather unfortunate name. And he's recently appears to be on the verge of winning re-election to his seat. I think his constituency has only like 5,000 people in it. So, you know, we're not talking about like a major political figure here. But although I guess for Namibia, that is, you know, not completely insignificant number of voters. But anyway, this has made headlines all around the world. And gentlemen, do you think we're in imminent invasion of conquest? I see Chris says. Chris?
Yes, given that the SANDF is famously underfunded, if anyone chose to come across the border, whatever their name might be, South Africa is exposed to that. I think we are.
You know, it's funny now, right? But we know that Namibia has this huge sort of natural gas and, mm-hmm. and oil and stuff off its coast. And that's expected to massively increase the government's budget. So maybe in 10 years, this won't be so funny because they might have a better equipped and organized military than we do, at which point, you know, this will start to take on a much more ominous tone. Yep. Offense, any thoughts?
I did read somewhere, shame. I did read that the guy's name, well, the guy came out and said his name is, his baptized name, as he says, is Adolf Ununa. And there is no Hitler in his name, even though he has noticed that people are calling him that. I know I'm being such a Debbie Downer. Don't invite me to any parties.
I've seen it.
Apparently, his name is not Hitler. Shame.
I've seen it as both. And it is an interesting trend that there was a period when a lot of African parents gave their kids names of like powerful figures around the world from back in the day. That's why I think there's an ANC spokesperson who they not very wisely got to respond to one of the US's statements who has the surname Stalin.
Which is Stalin. It's Stalin.
You know, if you're talking to the Americans and trying to get them on side, that's not a not the spokesperson you should choose to respond to them. But anyway, things are fun here down on the southern tip of Africa. But we like to have fun here, as they say. Anyway, hope you guys all have a wonderful weekend, and thank you very much. We shall see you all next week on the Daily Friend Show. We are coming up to the end of the show for the year. When we go on leave, I'll be off on leave. The show will go off air from about, I'm not sure the final day, I think it's the 10th or the 9th of December until sort of the middle of January. So we are getting close to the end of the Daily Friend Show. We hope you've enjoyed us over the year, and we'll see you next week. Cheers, everyone.